Good evening. In tonight's news, teachers, students, and parents all give school board a week to remember. U.S. calls for worldwide action against terrorists. Medicaid goes under a microscope. And anatomy made easy.
USC still tops in college football poll. Devaney says Big 8 travel rule causes big scores. American League East contenders get the night off, and NBA fines Atlanta $25,000.
A wet south wind keeps Indiana's moisture up. The rain keeps coming down. Parts of the Midwest under flash flood threat. Snow whitening the Upper Plains region, where temperatures stayed in the 40s today. Locally, umbrellas tomorrow, sweaters by Wednesday.
Now this Monday night, here's the way the world looks. The new Indianapolis School Board has been getting its baptism in large doses of controversy, a confrontation over court-ordered school desegregation and the threat of a teacher's strike. Well, tonight, school officials and representatives of the teachers' union are meeting to resume their contract negotiations and issue our salaries and class size. And parents of children on the city's southeast side met this evening to gear up for tomorrow night's school board meeting, a meeting which promises to be filled with tension. That court-ordered transfer of more than 200 students at two southeast side Indianapolis public schools went ahead today, but it wasn't without confusion among parents and students, Sid Thompson reports.
The schools involved in the court-ordered transfer were 111 and 114, both located on South Sloan. Under the order, all junior high school level pupils attending 114 were transferred to 111. That involved about 140 students. A like number of pupils, all in elementary grades, were transferred to school 114. Two other schools, 21 and 82, were not involved, although they were as of last Friday. Some of the confusion involved children living in a housing project adjacent to school 114. Parents expected buses to pick up their children shortly after 8 o'clock this morning. The buses never arrived.
We were told Friday that our children, some of them, be bused to school 21. They're supposed to leave at 8:05. 8:05 is no bus here. We had to see. If you didn't watch television, didn't know what was going on.
Now, I understand that some of the children from this area have gone to school. Now, have they been turned away or what?
I don't know. I know mine's gone. I don't see him back here yet.
Were they taking mainly the young children in the busing program? Is that the idea?
That's all. They're busing the young children from first through sixth grade.
Now, did you understand where they would be bused to?
I understood that mine was supposed to be bused to school 21. Most of them to 21 and 82 from 114.
What's the general reaction in the area? People in violent opposition to busing?
Well, I wouldn't say they're violent, but they're mad as hell.
The school 111 pupils involved in the transfer to 114 arrived at their new school by bus and car this morning. Apparently, most of the junior high school level pupils from 114 showed up as scheduled at 111. But school 111 principal Dr. Charles Robinson said a number of children who were to be transferred to 114 were kept at home by their parents.
Yes, many of the parents this morning that showed up indicated that they had arrived here to enroll their children, and when they were refused, they returned home.
What about the rest of the student body here today? Is it kind of upset things, or is it going along as usual, do you think?
Well, not as usual, but things are very peaceful, and we're running school.
Indianapolis School Superintendent Carl Kelp said he felt that things went rather smoothly in the student transfer today.
It went relatively smoothly. There was some confusion, of course, and there were some parents and kids who were at the wrong schools, but they were redirected, and, of course, there were a few parents who were unhappy, but nothing that at all got out of control or became even unpleasant so far.
Now you're going to see
what it's proposed today that the UN sponsor a world treaty aimed at ending the reign of fear by hijackers and other terrorists. Secretary of State Rogers went before the world body to call for a treaty to protect diplomats and other government officials and to suspend air service to any country which does not punish or extradite hijackers or saboteurs. Those three American prisoners of war released by Hanoi are due in New York Thursday now, after first passing through Moscow and Copenhagen. That's the word tonight from the anti-war group that gained their release. In Hanoi today, Premier Pham Van Dong told the Associated Press that his country wants to release all POWs when a peace settlement is reached. Meanwhile, the people who secured the release of the prisoners would be liable for a felony if a House committee has its way. The House Internal Security Committee today okayed a bill that would ban unauthorized trips by Americans to countries in armed conflict with the U.S. The bill would, for instance, apply to such trips as the one actress Jane Fonda made to North Vietnam. The House Ways and Means Committee, meanwhile, tentatively okayed President Nixon's proposal to put a limit on federal spending. Nixon has said that without a $250 billion limit, taxes would have to be increased next year. When asked by Democrats what areas of federal spending would have to be cut, the White House has refused to commit itself. A California congressman said today that it is inconceivable that a 20-year-old jet fighter that crashed in Sacramento yesterday could have been classified experimental. The Korean War vintage Saber jet was just taking off following an air show when it apparently had a flameout, crossed this field and plowed into an ice cream parlor, killing 22 persons, including 12 children. Congressman John Moss says there's no way the 20-year-old jet could be regarded as experimental, that it could have contributed nothing to aviation that has not been known now for many years. The Federal Aviation Administration is now investigating that crash. 4 million gallons of gasoline are going up in flames this evening at a tank farm near Chattanooga, Tennessee. One person dead, at least seven have been injured. Four huge tanks filled with gasoline exploded early today. Firemen fear that another tank is in danger of blowing. A mile square area has been evacuated around the tank farm. Firemen say the blaze will be impossible to extinguish until the fuel is burned up. President Nixon today urged a complete overhaul of the international monetary system, coupled with a warning that he will not accept any changes which will endanger the U.S. economy. The president spoke before the bankers and financiers attending the International Monetary Fund meeting in Washington. Nixon said, as he put it, "We cannot afford a system that almost every year presents a new invitation to a monetary crisis." Nixon's opponent this fall, Senator George McGovern, struck a familiar theme on the campaign trail today. He told an audience in Billings, Montana, that the Nixon administration does special favors for special contributors. McGovern said Nixon is doing the special interest bidding of a privileged few in the fields of conservation and environment. Louisiana's Medicaid program underwent a financial checkup today at the State House, and one result was some very healthy doctors. Channel 8's Frank Phillippe reports.
First time in 6 months of probing, legislative auditors have been given a look at how much doctors make from Medicaid patients. One general practitioner received $88,000 for treating poor people during the first 6 months of this year. That represented half of his practice. Others with large Medicaid practices would make from $85,000 to $120,000 for an entire year. The audit is the first step in determining if there might be any abuses in the program that cost the state about $100 million a year. The staff also questioned a demonstration of oral hygiene that one dentist reportedly gave to 420 of his Medicaid patients, including four members of the same family, the charge for each $10. For 6 months, that dentist got a total of $4,200 for demonstrations. Staff Auditor William Leap was asked if some of the charges by doctors were excessive.
I would say yes. At least to us, it appeared that the charge was excessive in relation to what the procedure called for that was being paid for by the program.
Were there any discrepancies in payments for doctors, say, for in their office and then again in a hospital?
Well, I wouldn't call it a discrepancy, but there was a quite variance in what they charge for an office visit and what they charge for an admission to a hospital and a daily care in a hospital.
What's the difference there?
The average cost for in-office was from 10 to 11. The average charge for an in-hospital visit, which would include the admission fee, $33 to $45.
Is there any indication that more service was provided in that place or just a higher charge?
We could see nothing that indicated that there was additional service, but it just appeared to be a greater charge.
Leap says that if the welfare department gets more investigators to review payments to doctors, nursing homes, and other providers, the Medicaid program might be able to save $15 million a year. The task force is also drawing up legislation for decertifying those providers found to be overcharging or not providing the required services. It is also drawing up administrative procedures to crack down on abuses by recipients.
The Marion County Unigov Council met tonight and by a vote of 26-0 approved the creation of an Economic Development Commission for Indianapolis. The purpose of the three-member bipartisan commission is to help attract new businesses or expand existing ones. The commission is empowered to loan up to $5 million per business to carry out its duties. The idea for an Economic Development Commission was first introduced last spring. All that is needed for the EDC to become law now is Mayor Lugar's signature. In other action, the council passed a measure asking the Department of Housing and Urban Development for $15.5 million to run next year's community services program. In Washington, the House today gave final congressional stamp of approval to that five-year Russian-American nuclear arms agreement. The measure freezes intercontinental nuclear missiles. The House accepted a Senate resolution which urges the President to seek equal American nuclear forces in any permanent arms limitation treaty. A frightened teenage mother told a bizarre story today in her jail cell in Union Springs, Alabama. The woman had been arrested in the tiny Alabama town following a report by police in Florida that she and her husband had traded their son for a 1971 Chevrolet. The father is still at large, but the mother is in custody, Spruce Hall reports.
19-year-old Jennifer Fire was returned this evening to Florida to face charges of trading her three-month-old son for an automobile. She claims the 1971 car was a gift and does not represent a trade for the child. But for the past week, she and her husband have been avoiding police and traveling with a small carnival. Over the weekend, some pictures were made of the family and they were recognized. 23-year-old Eugene Fire escaped through the woods, and a frightened Jennifer and the children were taken to an old county jail in Union Springs, Alabama. Last night, she told her story.
The welfare lady told me that little Jean needed to go to the hospital. Well, I told her, well, I'm going to take him to a private doctor. They don't want the welfare. And so she said, okay, and she left. Well, my husband went over to the trailer where the landlord lived, to the people that wanted little Jean, and they told him that they were going to come out in the morning, get a court order, and take the kids away from us. And, well, I didn't know what to do. I was scared. So I went over there, and I held little Jean in my hands, and I told her, I said, well, I'm going to let you have little Jean. But I'm going to tell you one thing right now. I said, I'm not trading that car for him. She says, I know. She says, I'm just going to give you the car. And so she made out this paper, and I signed it, and we left.
For her trip back to Florida this afternoon, she was reunited with her two other children. And it is expected they will be turned over to the state of Florida tomorrow. Bruce Hall, CBS News, Union Springs, Alabama.
Public official says he likes the news media these days. That's news. And the mayor of New Orleans is making news. Apparently, he gets along so well with newsmen in his city that he's giving some of them certificates of appreciation. Actually, he's thanking the newsmen for their efforts to get problem drinkers off the road. The certificates will be presented Wednesday night at a cocktail party. That may give Mayor Lugar some ideas, although this may be the one town in the country where you get the chaser before you get the drink. And the New York stock market opened the week with a sharp loss today. The Dow Jones average of 30 industrials dropped more than 7 points to finish at 935.73. The average share of common stock lost 19 cents. Slow volume saw less than 11 million shares traded. And finally, there was a day when a university textbook was ranked right alongside a telephone directory for dullness. But in this day of enlightened education, even that's changing. At Georgetown University in Washington, there is an anatomy textbook which has pictures of nude women splashing in the surf and posing on swings. A female professor at the university is up in arms over the book, calling it an obscene denigration of women. But the co-author of the text, Frederick Beecher of Michigan State, disagrees. He says he's just trying to liven up a dull subject. However, the fold-out picture of the Cro-Magnon skeleton is a bit too much. That's the news tonight. Thank you. Good evening.
WISH-TV, Channel 8, Indianapolis.